You've promised a top-to-bottom review of the child welfare system. As we mentioned earlier, there's also the Child Welfare Reform Council, which is doing a review of the child welfare system. Are those two reviews coordinated? Is it duplication of effort? How do those fit together?
I don't see them as duplication of effort. We work very closely with the Reform Council, and they're looking at issues from their perspective just the same as the issues that we're looking at from our perspective. And so I have regular conversations with that group to talk to them about what I'm seeing. It is also very beneficial, in my estimation, to have people come from a variety of disciplines to look at the work that we're doing to bring new ideas to it, and we welcome that.
Where is your review right now? What stage is your internal review?
My review is very preliminary at this point. I've only been here for 4 weeks at this point. And so what I'm doing is focusing on the biggest issues at hand. Two issues that I've been working most of the time on include the staffing that we're talking about today, as well as the electronic systems that we use to track data. Our child welfare information system is about, in technology terms, 15 years old. And so we're working daily to keep that up and running. It is due to be replaced in the near future, but until that happens, we're having to work on it on a daily basis to assure that our caseworkers are able to record the information that they collect as they do their work. And that's vitally important as well.
You also have a new director of the Georgia Office of the Child Advocate. Ashley Wilcott was named back in January. We spoke with her at that time. How is her role different from yours, and how do you work together?
You know, I think in simplest terms, what I would say Ashley's role is to hold us accountable and to look at things from an unbiased perspective, to give both the public and the governor information that will help them improve the system. I see that role as very much synonymous with what I'm trying to do. I have known Ashley for several years and have a great deal of respect for her. I really see the work that she does as supporting the same goal we have, which is the protection of children. In this field, if you think you ever have all the information that you need and that you're the person that knows the answer, I think you might ought to check into something else, because this is a field that has so many variables, so many different dynamics involved in it, that rarely does one person have the answer. It really takes a group of people from a variety of perspectives, a variety of educational backgrounds and experiences to look at a case, bring to bear all that knowledge, and then really formulate the best answer that we can come up with. So we welcome Ashley and her work, and I talk with her on a regular basis and ask her opinion on things many times.
So you don't see any potential conflict with her as perhaps an advocate, which is what her title implies?
You know, I don't see that at all. That's not to say that she and I won't differ on occasion. I know her and know her well. I think if we differ on something, we're both seasoned professionals, and we can have those conversations and learn from it and walk away a better social worker.
One of the issues that has come up a lot is the question of how secret records should be, because you want to protect the privacy of a family. On the other hand, if something is going on, people need to know. And if something horrible happens, law enforcement, the media, other people need to know to raise awareness of what's going on. What's the right balance here, and do we have it?
Well, I think that's something that the field has really struggled with for many years, and states have dealt with this in different ways. What I tell people when they ask this question is, first and foremost, I want you to consider the very most personal, deepest secret that you have about yourself and your family, and think how it would feel to have that aired for public viewing. So I think we do have a responsibility as a field, as a state, to protect the individual information of people that we do investigations on. However, I think at some point there is a need to share more information. For me, that is when a child dies, something goes badly wrong, And we need as much public light on that as possible so that people can look at what we're doing, better understand what we're doing, and ultimately have confidence in what we're doing. If we don't have the confidence of the public as an agency in long term, we are not going to be successful because we depend on the public to work with us to solve the issues in child welfare.
So are you saying it should be a child's death that perhaps opens records more than they would have been had the case still – had the child still been alive?
I think so. And a number of states have done this very thing. We actually have a law that went into effect on July 1st that increased the amount of information that is available to the public in these circumstances. So we're moving in that direction. I think it's a good point for debate, for public policy debate, as to exactly how open we should be. I think there is a public interest in understanding what your government does. And to the extent that we can protect the individual information that we have, the very personal information that we have, but also have the public understand the work we're doing and also have confidence that we're doing the right things, I think those are all things that have to be brought into that conversation. My inclination in a child death is to have more information go to the public than any other time. And I think a number of states have tried that approach and are being more successful with it. That's not to say that that will put the agency in the best light all the time. But I think it does allow the public to hold us accountable and to assure that we're doing the very best job we can to protect children.
Will it take additional legislation to get to the point that you're talking about?
I think it would probably take that. So this will be a part of the information that is considered by the Child Welfare Reform Council. I would suspect that there are members of the legislature that are already looking at this. We do have a fine line, a balance that we have to achieve between protecting personal information and providing information to the public. And that really is a legislative function, a function that the governor has to work with the legislature on to come to an agreement.
You mentioned a child's death as perhaps the point at which more information should be released. But could you foresee a situation where, let's say, a teacher, a law enforcement officer, a reporter, somebody who's been tipped off, a neighbor, anyone who thinks, okay, has this happened before to this child? Where is this child in the system?
Mm-hmm.
Where that person might really need that information in order to keep the child from dying?
You know, that is a real struggle. And I think we have to err on the side of protecting personal information for people unless there's something very serious that has happened. There are people in the system that have that information. So rather than have a lay member of the public have that information so that they know everything about a family that lives next door to them, for instance, rather than have that, what we do is we put that information in the control of government so that we can have that for consideration as we look at it. What we certainly have to ask for is that the public report to us any concerns like that so we can evaluate it. Then there are other oversight bodies short of a child dying that can really look at what we're doing in this regard, including the courts, including the Office of the Child Advocate. And, you know, frankly, the media holds us accountable in this as well they should, because they get information concerning cases that is very relevant for the public to know and, as you know, report on it quite frequently. And I think that's an appropriate thing for the media to do.
But is there a time factor here for going to, let's say, the courts? If someone is concerned, okay, I think this kid may be falling through the cracks. I need to get the information. Isn't there a time factor here, and doesn't that pose a risk to the child?
There's a time factor, but I don't think there is a situation where I would say make all information DFACS has open to the public. It is just too personal, too private.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't saying all
information. Very damaging.
Is there some of the information that might be released upon a child's death that maybe should be released in some cases before that happens?
I don't know. We'd have to look at the specific information. I think this is something that really needs consideration and debate at the legislature, at the governor's level, because this is so important that that level of decision needs to be reserved for those elected leaders of the state.
Another issue that's come up, and here's an example. There was a young woman who I believe is about 16 years old who wanted to stay in foster care and would have stayed on the rolls, been part of the caseload, but instead was moved back to her home where she's now no longer part of the caseload, no longer part of those numbers, and she ended up, I believe, killing herself because she didn't want to go back to that home. How do we keep kids being just taken off the rolls and put back into possibly dangerous situations in order to make the case numbers go down?
My charge from the governor was to assure that we were attending to child safety first and foremost. And the goal of reunification of families, I think, is a good one. It's not incompatible with safety for children. However, I think we also have to listen to kids, especially as they get older. If they have concerns with going back to a home, we have to understand what those concerns are so we can make a better informed decision. That is a difficult decision to have to make. Certainly those type situations are things that are heartbreaking to me to hear about, to read. But they're also those cases that I keep in mind as I get up to go to work every day, because that is what drives me. I don't want that to happen to any child.
Have you found any cases like that? And again, your review is in the very preliminary stages, but have you found anything like that where kids are moved in order to make the numbers look better?
I have not, and if I did see that, I would put a stop to it. I have very clearly communicated to the staff that work for me that your first consideration always has to be the safety of the child. If you have any doubts about that, you don't make that move. I really think that we have to better engage the public to help them understand the work that we do, really talk to our lawmakers, because a number of the things that we're talking about here are guided by federal law. There are requirements in federal law that we make reasonable efforts to reunify a child with a parent in most situations. So it is a balancing act for us to assure that we're meeting state and federal law, but also doing good social work practice, which would dictate that you listen to children, that you understand the family dynamics, and that you're erring on the side of safety anytime you're dealing with them.
Long term, the question's been raised, should the system be privatized? It's been tried in other places with very mixed results. Do you think that should be an option here in Georgia?
Well, I think we're trying this out. It's at the behest of the governor. In a couple of regions, we're working in the foster care end of the system in order to see what privatization might do for us. What I would tell you is that much of the system currently is run by contract with private entities. And so we have a lot of churches, a lot of nonprofit organizations, as well as for-profit entities that provide services to families and children, including foster care. So we're taking a look at how that might look. We are also very aware of experiences of other states. And it has been a mixed bag. We have had some good things happen. We've had some things that are not desirable happen in other states. But we've also seen that consistently it is more expensive than a state-administered system. So we know that in—
Which is not what the conventional wisdom is among advocates of privatization in other areas anyway.
Right. Well, and, I met as recently as last week with David Wilkins, who's the former secretary of the Department of Family and Children in Florida, which is a oftentimes referred to state. He told me last week that privatization was one of the biggest mistakes that Florida had ever made. They have a system where the money goes directly from the legislature and is appropriated to private entities that run the system. That does not negate the fact that then the state is also responsible to the federal government to show that they're meeting the outcomes that are required. So it makes it a very difficult system to operate if the state is not in control of it. You also have a circumstance there where they've used public money to lobby for additional funds for those private entities, which in my estimation is very concerning.
So the bottom line on privatization, just to wrap that up, is we'll see, we're still looking. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And, you know, I never want to rule that out. Some of the very best providers that we have in the state are private entities, and they do certain things in a much better way than we do. I would point to what we call resource development, where you're looking for foster parents. The state has never done a particularly good job at doing that. Private agencies can do that very well. They also are able to provide support to foster parents that the state is not able to provide. Now, it is more expensive, and we typically depend on those private entities to handle the kids with the highest level of needs. So there are things that they do much better than the state government can ever do. And we want us to continue to support them in that. We also want to understand through these pilots that the governor has initiated exactly what we can do to expand on that to make sure that we're getting the very best for our children.
Looking at the big picture, these problems, high caseloads, children falling through the cracks, children being sent back into dangerous situations where, in some cases, they end up dying, this is nothing new. There have been calls for reform going back to even before Terrell Peterson, and he was a decade or more ago. Now we have the name of Imani Moss, which so many people remember. Why has it taken so long, and why are we looking at the same problems we've had for decades now, and it seems as if we're still staring at them, and it's costing children?
You know, I think the fact that we have this problem on an ongoing basis and have for decades is really symptomatic of the fact that these are extremely complex problems. These are not problems that are easily resolved. And I think you have this same situation in many other states. It seems to be cyclical somehow. I think what it points out is that you can never really overstate the importance of having adequate caseworkers in order to handle the caseloads. You can never really have a overstatement of the importance of having adequate funding to provide services to families.
And that's where I was going, because you mentioned the complexity, and certainly that is true. But
yes. When
you talk about caseloads, when you talk about funding, isn't it also a question of priority and will at the level of administrators and lawmakers?
You know, I think that's true. And I think what Governor Deal has done here is a good example of taking leadership in a bad situation and trying to move us forward. This is something that is of great concern. Of course, this is the area I've worked in for 25 years. So I'm constantly thinking about how we could do better as a system. So I think it is a reminder to those who allocate the funds at the legislature and to future governors and other leaders that you have to fund this in a way that is adequate, that helps us identify and deal with issues of families prior to them ever getting to the point in time where they have abused or neglected a child. If we don't do that, we have really sold the future of our children, the most vulnerable children that we have, short. And so my encouragement is always that we look toward investing more in prevention activities as well as investing in the system that deals with these once the child abuse neglect comes to our attention.
Bobby Cagle is the new director of the Division of Family and Children's Services in Georgia, often called DFACS. Commissioner Cagle, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.